I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and welcome to another of AutoCars podcasts. I'm Matt Saunders, AutoCars road test editor, and I'm delighted to be joined in the AutoCar headquarters podcast bunker by some voices that you will know. Matt Pryor, James Isdale and Richard Lane. Now we're going to get stuck into one of the most celebrated performance brands there is on the planet, I think, BMW M. I'm sure many of us still think that it's a fairly young company, but this year BMW Motorsport celebrated its 50th anniversary, which is long enough to have amassed quite a large and glittering back catalogue. So we're going to go through some of those cars in the next hour or so, and mention some of the highlights and perhaps some of the lowlights as well. We're going to talk about our favourite M cars, the ultimate M car, what defines them, and what we'd like the company to do next. But before we get into all of that, first of all, gentlemen, you've got one word to sum up the BMW M division. Give us your best shot. Matt, you can go first.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, so I knew you were going to say that, and I don't. One word is really hard, because it's, if you want, variable, because they do not... They are not always the same thing. You know, an M car is not always the same thing. Whereas an AMG, Mercedes, I tend to think is a bit of a hot rod, and a Porsche is always a sports car. Is a BMW M always the same? No, I'm not sure it is. So I'm going to go more than one word. It emphasises the best of the model it's based on.
Oh, that's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, a bit. Sorry.
What about you, Diz? You sort of agree with that?
I agree with what you say. That's, yeah. But one word, I'm going to be clinical here, because you did one word, and I'm going to use the word precision, and I'm using it in reference to its rivals, AMG, Audi RS. They deliver very different characters. So against that backdrop, for me, precision. Okay. Only the latest cars, okay, and some of the older ones.
Is it possible to make like an 8 Series feel precise, or a two-ton SUV?
Compared to maybe an S63,
okay.
Maybe. It's a relative term.
Okay.
I may not have thought through this quite as much as I thought I had.
What about you, Ricky? Where are you on this? What's your word?
Oh, it's a very difficult one. I've chosen attainable. Because that old saying, you know, if you want a proper driver's car, you would normally gravitate towards a Porsche. But the whole point of M is that you can get, you know, a very serious driver's car. People who, most of the time, really, really care. Motorsport, influence, heritage, culture. Half the price of a entry-level 911 in some cases, like the M2. Now, the prices are creeping up, but I think M still hits that really... It scratches that really important bit of the petrolhead soul. And it, you can get a lot of what Porsche offers for a lot less money.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. So we've got attainable, we've got precision, we've got something...
Variable.
Something very long-winded. I sort of think that's fair enough. I think I would have gone for... balanced, which is obviously a bit of a cop-out, because it in a literal sense, in terms of the way you might characterise how they handle, but also a balance of different virtues in a product, which I think is important for BMW M cars in a way that maybe it isn't so important for some of the other brands we've mentioned, you know. So they've got to do everything, haven't they?
Yeah.
That's the thing with M cars. They've got to sort of be real-world cars. They've got to be desirable cars. They've got to be great to drive, but you've also got to be willing to drive them a lot. Mm. They've got to be affordable. It's all this stuff.
That's so true, isn't it? Because even within the world of, you know, the M inhabits, Audi can be a lot more focused. They can just focus, you know, do their old shtick of Quattro. AMG can just be, you know, go gangbusters on the noise and you know, be superficially spectacular. They sort of operate in those silos of appeal, but M, you're absolutely right, it has to sort of do everything. It has to be as fun to drive as an AMG and engaging, and it has to feel as confidence inspiring and secure, you know, 99% of the time as an Audi. I'd say it's got the toughest job in the class, an M car, any new M car.
Yeah, I reckon that's totally fair.
So let's develop that a bit. I mean, if you were to define M cars in opposition to Audi RS cars or AMG cars or Porsches, mechanically and objectively, how would you do that? Is there a strand running through all of them that, you know, is sort of consistent and always there? Or is it more of a sort of a feel with them?
I don't know, mate, because they are very different. I mean, an M5 CS, the latest one, is very different from an E30 M3, which is very different from like the M4 GTS or whatever. You know, I'm not sure there is quite the common strand to it. I don't know if you could, and by the time you start throwing in the variants of the SUVs, M variants of those, do you think you would instinctively know if you were thrust into a simulator that perfectly simulated the driving dynamics of a car, you'd go, oh yeah, that's probably a BMW M. Whereas you might have a better idea of that if it replicated all that an AMG did or all that an Audi RS did. I'm not sure, given the breadth of it, I'm not sure I would know necessarily with a BMW M car. I'm not sure I'd know.
That's not
a bad thing.
No, but would you say that was always been the case, or is it a result of the broadening of the brand, which we might well come on to?
Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is a result of that. Yeah, they want to sell more cars in more markets and variants of more models, and inevitably, you know. And then sometimes they'll let the engineers go, hey, just do what you like with that, and they come up with an M3 GTS or whatever it might be, or the M4 GTS.
One M Coupe, mate.
Yeah. One M Coupe, yeah, for example. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, one M Coupe and a X50D, X5 or whatever, you know. I mean, they are not the same thing, are they?
No. And if it all started, I mean, we started at the start with obviously the M1. It's funny that the brand has developed in the way it has, given where it started. It started with what you might sort of loosely call a supercar, but there hasn't really been one since. So how important do we think the kind of usability and practicality of M cars is the way that the brand has developed a reflection on how it defines itself in opposition to everybody else?
I think so. I think, yeah, the M1's a glorious thing, but it's a one-off. It's almost not an M car, weirdly. It sits off on its own. And I think it goes back to what you're saying about attainability. I think an M car has to do everything. It's the sort of car where, yeah, maybe you want a cage room in the garage and you want a 911 and you want a nice saloon car, but you can only have one car and it has to do all those things. You have to, as you say, get that feeling you might get from a Cayman or a 911 driving it, but you also need to be able to throw the kids in it and go on holiday.
I think the M1 though was so important though. If you know Jochen Nierpasch, the CEO of the first MD of M, early 70s, he really pushed for that, and he's regarded within M as the first M car. You just cannot understate its importance. Is it an M car as we know it today? No. I mean, they asked Lamborghini to build the original run, which just shows you how far removed from you know, the everyday usable idea an M car it is. But nonetheless, I mean, what a statement. And of course the engine was, you know, laid down a template which then paved the way for, you know, this whole run of incredible Q cars through the late 70s and early 80s. So it's not very M today, but it is so M in terms of the skunk work style M division of the 1970s.
Is the engine the most common M theme between cars? Is that the thing that would most make you think an M is an M because it's got a special engine?
Possibly. I think in the early days, probably. But in the modern era, no, it's handling adjustability for me all day long.
Mm. No, I'd agree with that. I think at one stage it might have been, but they've sort of come to occupy this positioning whereby they're a little bit less sort of, they're a bit more understated than some of their rivals, aren't they? They don't go after necessarily the most powerful car in its class. Mm. They don't necessarily go after the noisiest, you know, the most sort of visceral kind of dramatic powertrain, I don't think. And in a, you know, in the way that M3 is developed, they would say that we had opportunities to, you know, and they did stick a V8 in it at one point, obviously, and then they've come back to a straight six. And I think that says a lot about their approach. It's all about the balance of the product, isn't it? And having everything in proportion and sort of allowing that proportion to feed into a driving experience that is sort of, that isn't kind of, doesn't feel too heavy in any one particular regard. It's not overpowered. It's not, you know, it's not particularly dedicated to a particular sort of pattern of usage. It does so much across such a broad spread of usage patterns and all the technology that comes into them now. You know, the modern M car with all of its various active systems, I think, is really just building on that. You know, it's the kind of performance car that can do everything, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It's about authenticity, though, isn't it? For me, that's probably the most appealing thing about M in regard to its rivals, the authenticity, which is why I think actually with the new G20 M3, M4 and that grille, I think that's why we find it so offensive, because its predecessors, you know, E92, E36, even its direct predecessor had a really nice understated vibe. You know, it left the shouty exhausts to AMG and the real, you know, the all-out aesthetic thuggery to Audi with, you know, their ever-growing grills, and everything was just kept nicely in proportion. You felt like in an M3 you could show up anywhere at any time and, you know, you wouldn't create too much of a scene. But of course, unleash a thing on a B road, I'm really thinking about the E92 here, and it's a real animal. And I think perhaps with the latest generation M3, M4 have just moved away from that a bit, which is why, as I say, I think we feel quite uncomfortable about it, because I don't actually aspire to own the latest M3 in the same way I did its predecessors.
Because of that grille?
It's not just because of that grille. It's just the whole thing is sort of transmogrified slightly into something that's a little bit more taking it to AMG in a superficial way, and M was never really about the superficiality.
It's about
deep authenticity, real care for like what makes a good driver's car, and then like executing on it. And I just worry a little bit that we're moving away from that slightly.
It's more of a statement car.
Yeah,
I mean, it still does all the things an M3 should, but clearly the market has changed, and the sort of customer they're trying to attract. Yeah. They're broadening the reach of customers, obviously. So there's ones, like you say, that want that AMG look. They want to pull up outside wherever they're going, people to go, look what I'm driving. But they still appeal to people like us who just want to drive it.
Yeah. Sure. And you go back to something like an E28 M5, and you know, a big part of the appeal for that car was the complete opposite attribute. The fact that it looked so unbelievably subtle, barely any different from a regular 5 Series. We seem to have changed, you know, it's been a complete vault fast. Can you blame them, though? Not really. Market forces.
Can they do that anymore? Is that a viable sort of design tactic in the market as it is now, when everybody else has, you know, got the volume turned up design-wise to a million?
I don't think it is viable, and I think that's a real shame. But, I mean, to go back to Alpina, which we were chatting about before we hit record, you know, fabulous cars, loads of appeal to a big subset of petrol heads, but would they do the volumes globally that M needs to do?
This is interesting, isn't it?
In terms of business case, I don't think they would.
I don't know. I mean, now that BMW, I know you don't want to dwell on Alpina too much, but now that BMW has taken control of Alpina, maybe that does give them the subtle look, don't look at what I'm driving option in BMW's owned range, rather than leaving it to somebody else. And then, so then M can do what it amplify its showy, look at me, here I am, better, louder, brighter than an AMG, and there's the Alpina for all those people who just go, no thanks.
So just quickly, because we don't want to derail this onto Alpina, Matt, you've just come back from Germany, launched the updated B3 and a couple of others, spoken to Andy Bovens, even right to the top. So a lot of people think that with this BMW really, you know, taking control for the first time of Alpina, that Alpina could end up as a trim line. But what you're suggesting is that actually there will be a mechanical differentiation as well.
I don't know, and the Bogan Siepen family don't know either. BMW have bought the name, and that's it. They can do whatever they want with it. And the family retain Alpina to use as Alpina Classic. If things carry on as they are till 2025, I think late 25, the model rollout that they've got anticipated. And from that point on, it's BMW's call. And it could be just a trim level, but you'd hope not, wouldn't you? I mean, there's plenty of trim. Why do BMW need more trim levels? It would be nice to think that they would do something a bit more special with it. I mean, M suits more outright sports showy stuff, and Alpina doesn't. And I don't know. It'd be nice to think they'd do something nice with that name.
Yeah. That niche, that need among people like us and people listening, as I hope, for a car that is that fast, you know, like an Alpina B3, but that rounded, isn't going to disappear overnight just because, you know, the corporate structure of the company changes. So yeah, I would really hope that does carry on.
So if we just sort of move on to our own personal favourite M cars of forever, I mean, are they the smaller, sportier kind of, you know, more kind of feral ones, or are they the big kind of powerful sledgehammery saloony ones, or should we start with you, Diz? What's your favourite M car?
Favourite M car ever. I have to be careful here because my favourite I've not actually driven, and I really want to have a go, but it is an E28 M5. That idea of the sledgehammer pace wrapped up in a car that looks like a 518i really, really appeals to me.
You're subtle.
You'd love it.
Yeah, well, look at me.
I drove one early this year for the first time ever, and it completely blew me away. I think maybe because, you know, the knowledge that it's such a legend, but it's everything you want it to be. It's totally sat back, but sort of innately special. But equally, as we said in the mag recently, like, did BMW at the time think they were creating like an absolute legend? No, it was still something that they were just dipping a toe in the water with. But these days, you know, E28 for M5, does it get any cooler?
Yeah, I mean, I'm of an age where I remember reading the contemporary tests of that car, and just the idea that what was then supercar pace in something that had four doors and five seats was just a revelation. It was just, I mean, they couldn't write enough hyperbole about this car. And it's always appealed to me ever since. I just love the concept. Whether that's a defining M characteristic, as we've already discussed, I'm not sure. But as a car, as a concept, regardless of the badge, I love that idea. And I think the E28 has done it better than almost anything. And I would put second E34, because, again, it followed the same.
So as long as an M5 with crap brakes, you're in, mate.
Yeah. I want to go really quickly and then not slow down. That's what it's all about.
Excellent.
But do you think there's a real spiritual successor to the E28 M5 these days? Or even in the last 15 years? Anywhere in the M range?
I can't think of... Can't think of anything.
It doesn't exist, does it, really?
No. But it's just... Oh, well, I can't believe you've had a go. That's not fair.
I drove an E34 on the same trip, actually. I'm so sorry.
If I had my microphone on here, I'd rip it off and walk out.
And where did that leave you, mate? Does that mean an E34 M5 is your all-time fave, mate? Or what would it be?
No, I think the E28 had an effect on me. And I think maybe because I've been a Lancia Delta Gralliano for 10 years, and I just got into the E28. And I thought, this is everything, just felt very familiar of its time. I think there's a lot of sort of synergy with cars of that era. And it got wonderfully transparent steering. Obviously, the engine needs no introduction. It's not, you know, like a sort of saber-toothed animal, but it's just a like crystalline manner in which it builds revs. And it's just so perfectly linear. Visibility, outstanding. Comfort, ridiculous. Ridiculously comfortable car. It's got lovely, lovely roll rates, and you could honestly, even now, sit in it all day. You could drive it to Munich, and you'd be very comfortable. It's just a stunning, stunning package.
But not your favourite M car?
No, my favourite M car is probably one I haven't actually driven.
That's a lot of theme emerging.
Weirdly, no.
She's worrying for me.
E92 is very cool. I've never done a GTS, but you drive an E92, and you do think, gosh, if this was a little bit lighter, a little bit tighter, wouldn't it be unbelievably good, unbelievably fun, because that car is like, you know, the great, I think of the modern era, the E92 is probably the most, has the greatest level of duality of all the M3s in a way. Is the GTS as good as I want it to be?
So for those of us who are rubbish with BMW M model codes, which includes, which includes me, the E92 is late 2000s, 2007 onwards. Yeah. E28 is late 80s?
Yeah, 85,
86. E34...
90s. Well, early 90s.
Yeah, E34 was the last 6-cylinder M5.
The last 6-cylinder M5 before the V8, which you like a lot.
Yes, I do.
Yes, okay. I think they're better smaller, as a rule. I like the small ones. 1M Coupe, the M2 competition. The current... I spent a bit of time in a fairly recent M5, and it didn't do everything I would have wanted an M car to do, because it was less comfortable than a 5 Series, but it's still 2 metres wide, 4.9 metres long, and nearly 2 tonnes. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't excite me in a way. It's very quick and it's great. And if you lived in Germany, I'm sure it would be fantastic, because you could do that thing that some wealthy German owners do, and instead of flying from Munich to Stuttgart, or, you know, from Hanover to Berlin, whatever, you get in the car and you drive, and that's part of the fun. And that's one of the things that Alpina says with their owners. You know, they do have people who do that. They buy them and they want to go 160 miles an hour down the motorway, so they do.
This is your old M5 competition long-termer, right?
Yes, yeah. From, when was that, 2014?
That wasn't a comp, was it? That was a regular one.
Were they not all comps at the time?
No, that was a long time ago. That was 2018.
Maybe it was a comp.
It was 2018.
And I know that, because I did exactly the sort of journey in it. You lent it to me for a trip to cover M24
that year.
I absolutely fell in love with it, because, again, it did that. It's about 6 hours, isn't it, from Nürburgring to Calais?
Yeah.
And it just did it beautifully. Yeah. And the seats, stunning, you know, again.
Yeah. And in a similar vein, I've got an Audi Q7 TDI V6, V12 TDI on for a short while, which I took to Germany the other week for a job. In the UK, it's quite awesome, but you get to de-restrict a bit of autobahn, and it's still pulling at 160 miles an hour. And you go, this makes perfect sense now. This is exactly what this car's for. It's got a 500-mile range, and suddenly it makes sense. But so from my use case, as somebody who enjoys small cars, small M's work better than big ones for me.
But are they, as a breed, I'm a little bit worried that the compact M car is sort of... is on the, you know, is
on the cusp of extinction.
Might be on the way out, mate.
Well, it's a worry, isn't it? Because it's the small platforms are all front wheel drive, so they've got to either scale down a smaller rear wheel drive one as it gets. Yeah. Mind you, this may become less of an issue as they get more electrified anyway, because front rear wheel drive, it's not like...
Well, new M2 is obviously on M3, M4 platform, so that is effectively as wide as
M3, M4. And that's as big as I would want an M car to be.
Slightly shorter wheelbase, but it doesn't feel a lot smaller. Mm. And then you get down into, you know, M Performance 1 Series, which aren't really the same thing.
Not really. We're not going to get a 1M Coupe again, are we? That's the thing.
No.
But Matt, you've driven the new M5, but in prototype. It's a late validation prototype, wasn't it? Something like that.
Years ago,
What is contributing...
M5 or M2?
So M2 competition.
M2,
did I say M5? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
M2. What's contributing the weight there? Because that is going to be... That's going to be 1,650. With fuel and a driver, that's going to be 1,700 kilos plus.
Yeah, well...
Now, that's the problem. Not necessarily the footprint. I mean...
They just took the view that they had all of this proven tech that they'd already poured money into for M3, M4, and it was all there on the shelf. And they know how good it is, and, you know, what sort of a product that they can make if they just use all that proven stuff, or they can, you know, start from scratch, and, you know, go through a much more complicated, intensive process. And they didn't know how much weight they'd end up saving. And I think they ended up just basically sort of wearing it, just sort of saying, yes, well, we're going to end up with a car that's maybe 150 kilos heavier than we would like, but it will have all of these other advantages that we already know about.
But is the end result just a slower, less expensive M3?
No, it feels different. It doesn't... I'd say it's sort of halfway between outgoing M2 and an M4. There is a little bit more sort of agility because of the shorter wheelbase, but it doesn't feel a great deal smaller. And obviously there's a great deal of familiarity with the way that the sort of configurable driving experiences, you know, and they love that about modern M cars. They think that's what the customer wants. Yeah. He wants to be able to get in and have his little orange steering wheel buttons and set up everything to his liking. That is almost the defining characteristic of a modern M car for them,
I think. Is it four-wheel drive, this? No,
it's rear drive only, and they're going to do a manual. So they'll be that to make a difference. But it does, you know, it's sort of, there's a sophistication to it because of the adaptive damper, which, you know, only CS had in the previous gen. Mm-hmm. And it feels a little bit softer at the rear end. And yeah, it's not quite as sort of in your face.
With the complexity and the configurability, do you think they're a little bit high on their own supply with this? Has it gone too far? Because that's meant to be the purest car of the range ever since, you know.
Yeah, I think they
one
get...
Is that a new phrase on you? Higher than their own supply?
No, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed its use there. I thought that was beautiful.
But since the 1M arrived, that's probably been the fan favourite template for an M car. So yeah. I think it's probably between that and M5, because M5 never goes out of fashion. They just keep doing good.
Globally, it's a different picture. I think they know that maybe the established European markets love those little cars, and they knew the UK was going to be a big market for M2, for instance. I don't know how big globally it'll be, really. I think they get that it's an important product for them to do and to get right and to really sort of distill their sort of essence into. But I don't know. I think they just they want it to feel grown up, and they want it to feel, you know, like a fully fledged M car, and maybe some of the feedback they had of the old one was that it didn't maybe quite feel as grown up as some of the other M cars, and they wanted to put that right. And there are obviously, you know, maybe some costs involved with that. I don't know. It's not like it wasn't fun.
No, but I think you know, all of us, we want an M2 to feel different from an M5, to feel different from an M3. But I think we especially want the M2 to be in its own universe. Whereas I think a lot of people, goes back to the grill issue, a lot of people are buying these cars for reasons other than, you know, driving, essentially. Mm. And the more you can make a cheaper facsimile of a big, bad M car, the more popular it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's ultimately where we are with the M2, by the sounds of things.
Because what I would really love is for BMW to go, here is our latest M car, and it to have a similar sort of mechanical specification in terms of power, weight and everything else to something like a Toyota GR86. But they're not going to, because they don't have a platform to do it, and they won't make any money out of it, because nobody will buy it. So, yeah, which is where we are, isn't it?
Is a Z4 platform good enough to do something truly brilliant in that mould?
It's got the raw ingredients, isn't it?
That's true.
Why not?
Yeah.
It's possible. Everything's possible. You throw enough money at it, I guess. And this probably comes back to why the M2 now is like it is, because how much money are they willing to spend at a car that appeals to people like us? And I think we're a decreasing minority. Most M car customers, I suspect, aren't as excited by the way a car drives as we are. And there probably wouldn't be an M2 if they couldn't chop down a 3 Series platform.
No, it's a good point, mate.
And stick it out there. And that's sad. And it's why I certainly don't run big businesses, because I would make stupid decisions and I would come out with that car that you were talking about. Three people would buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'd be living under a flyover with a bin on fire.
But what a CV, you know.
I know.
But I wouldn't necessarily say that we are a decreasing species. I would just say that the wider market is broadening, but I think the core enthusiasts still exist, and perhaps even more than they were. If you look at the numbers of, I know people go, oh, nobody buys car magazines anymore, but actually more people listen to and watch and read what we do than ever. It's just in a very different way, and I think, but there's just a greater sphere of, you know, as people on the planet get richer, there are more people who buy showy cars.
I like your positivity.
I want to go with what you've just said. Yeah.
It's broadening.
I think it's broadening. In the same way that, you know,
in more people
sell. Yeah, and I think, you know, Ferrari sells more cars than ever, and people go, oh, do you worry that you'll ever become, you lose your exclusivity? And they say, well, no, but it's just the fact that every year there are more millionaires. So actually the market becomes bigger. You don't suddenly use all of the millionaires up. There's just more of them all the time. So actually, and the same is true of, you know, the same is true of all sports cars and things like that. I can't remember one stat that one manufacturer gave me as the number of middle class people, which means they class that as anybody who can afford a BMW 5 Series, that there are in China. But the number was something like 700 million. It's an unbelievable amount of people who can suddenly buy a car and they wouldn't have done before. So whereas M was only in the business of selling cars to the likes of, you know, enthusiasts, little, you know, from small number of countries, you can now sell a lot of cars in a lot of places.
And I guess it's interesting, going back to sort of the broadening market and talking about why don't we have that subtle saloon car anymore. I don't know off the top of my head what the proportion of M Sport trim lines is on BMWs, but I suspect it's the most popular.
Massive,
bike.
Isn't it? Yeah.
So people are, that M has such a big draw that people are already, they're already sort of buying an M car if they can't afford one, because they're making their 120D look like a
PCP special, isn't it? Yeah. You know, the 116i engine and then absolutely everything from the M Sport catalogue on it.
Yeah.
Because it's about £4 extra a month to get, you know, a great big splitter or something. Yeah.
So what do we say? We said E28 M5, to go back to the question.
This is for ones we've driven, right?
Just your favourite M5.
Just your favourite, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you said E92 GTS?
Well, potentially, yeah. Potentially. But no one actually answered my question, like, is it as damn good as I want it to be?
I can't remember.
Yeah,
who's driven one? You must have all driven one.
Yeah, we drove one.
All of you
driven
one. We're
borrowing one this week, mate, so ask us in 24 hours.
You're joking. Oh, come on. I'm definitely going to come along.
We did a video with one at Millbrook, didn't we? And it was on the hill route. With something else doing a chase, one of those chase videos back in the days when we could do that, and people.
Health and safety didn't
look at it so closely. And it was great. It was the orange one, wasn't it? Yeah. It was great fun, wasn't it? I think quite harsh. And this is what I mean, you know, it's a very broad. M is very broad. This is about as extreme as it gets from memory. It was, you know, it clatters a bit over. You hear the stones as they ping up onto the underbody.
It's got like a rose jointed.
I don't know actually, but
is it that hardcore?
It didn't quite have the hardcore sort of fully adjustable coilover setup as the
most recent M4 GTS, was there? But it was pretty wild. It was good fun, very adjustable, very pointy at the front, and then quite adjustable at the back. So you'd turn it in at the right speed, very accurate front end, and then you could start messing around with it. I think you'd like it.
So it sounds a bit like a Porsche.
Rest assured, you chose it.
Yeah, it's good.
And you were going for something little.
Well, I was, but my favourite M car is actually the M1 prototype, which was called the Turbo Concept or something like that, which technically isn't an M car really, because it's from before the brand was born. You've got it.
Incredibly,
he's cheating
cool,
again.
Really,
isn't
really,
no,
really
I'm unbelievable. I'm just
reading. I am cheating, but the reason is I had a book. I went to the Science Museum when I was a kid on a school trip, and I bought a BMW book from the bookshop on the way home, and that was, I think it was on the, actually it may not have been on the cover, but it was certainly inside, and I just thought that is the coolest car I have ever seen. I was, I don't know. 9 probably, so it was, but it's
so it's Stuart Bladen's
book, yeah, Stuart former Autocar road tester, in fact, from the blimey, when was he on the back, 60s, 70s, I think,
yeah, I think so,
yeah.
But that car had a 4-cylinder engine, didn't it? The concept
did, I think, yes, yeah, wasn't it,
rather
like
than
a motorsport turbo engine rather than a 6, yeah,
still very cool, yeah, but
that's okay.
Not a 6,
yeah, yeah. Not a 6, no.
Yeah, and I think I was going to go for an E46 M3, but not a CSL, because I was lucky enough to drive one of those.
Yeah.
And this is one of those moments we talked about where we're sport rotten kids and say, oh, I drove this brilliant car and it wasn't as good as I thought it was. But yeah, the gearbox on that car is rubbish.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
People will tell you it's not.
But this is a trend,
but
isn't it?
They are making it up. It's like Smart for Two and not Smart for Two, and then Smart Roadster, and people are like, oh, it's not that bad. Yes, it is. It's really terrible.
Yeah, but I remember reading, I haven't driven one, but I remember Adam Towler years ago, when I was not long on the mag, he did a lovely drive story with a CS. So that was obviously, it had the carbon roof as a CSL, but it had a manual box, and it was one of the sort of run out E46s. Mm. And you kind of go, well, maybe there isn't an optimum, you know, maybe M cars can be any size, you know, there's all this wonderful variety. But actually, when you drive a 46, I think you realise that that is the optimal M car. It's the optimal size. It has that layer of usability, but it's not too big or heavy to sort of be corrupted in any way. Steers fantastically, you know, it just sort of one of the great front engine rear drive sports cars there's ever been.
I have driven a manual conversion, and it is as good as you think it will be. Mm. That would be the best camper car I've driven, I think.
Yeah, and it was really popular, wasn't it? In its day, you saw a lot of them.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, some of them were treated a bit harshly, I think, by owners. But a lot of them, you know, there must still be a lot of them around. And, you know, I know they're not as cheap as they used to be, but in terms of there being a car that's still fairly affordable, you know, and still,
I'm not sure about that.
I think people use them in the way that you'd, but in the way that you'd want to as well. I think that a lot of people do tend to use a bit like old Renault Sport Clears and Meganes and things, and some 911s. People do use them properly. They don't.
You see them, don't you? I was at Caffeine Machine the weekend, and there was about three or four of them.
But that's very M, isn't it? That is the essence of M, to use it. You know, put thousands and thousands of miles on it.
And we've been talking about, sort of touching on how the product range has been broadened to attract more customers. There's a case that it was sort of always like that. I mean, you look at the number of E46 convertibles out there.
That's a fair point.
Now, I like a convertible. I'm going to say that now. Please send your complaint letters directly to Matt Saunders, Road Test Editor.
He's not my friend.
But I'm not saying I would have a convertible E46 M3, but there are so many out. And that's because people wanted, I guess, the performance, the look, the sound, but they also wanted to pose a bit.
Yeah. So E46, 2001,
2? The CSL is like 3, 4, isn't it?
Yeah, it's later. Yeah. I think it was it was very, very early noughties through to, you know.
It was a real purple patch. Within no time at all, you got updated 996 GT3, 360 Challenger Daily, CSL, let's just chuck in Ford GT. You know, was that five-year period, 2005. I was, you know, a teenager at that point, so it was just a very exciting time. But
do you think, though, that your age shaped how much you like those cars?
Probably. I mean, I own a Mark 1 Focus RS, as you know, and that kind of very much slots into to that vibe that the manufacturers were, you know, most of the serious performance car makers at some point in the early 2000s came out with something brilliant.
Yeah,
I think those cars are now becoming more appreciated than ever. You know, we're moving through that sort of 20-25 year cycle, but I think that period will go down as an incredible period for drivers' cars, that sort of analog digital crossover, just to repeat the cliche on that. And I think the CSL is like right at the sharp end of that collection of brilliant drivers' cars.
I'm going to be one of those people that didn't totally hate the SMG gearbox. I know, you could look at me like that, you're right. It's a woeful gearbox, but the geek in me likes a bit of transmission management.
Oh, okay.
You know, trying to smooth the shifts yourself.
Having 5 minutes notice for every gear change.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't like to rush.
Go to change gears.
Ding, 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 ding.
You hear that a lot more, people talking about, it's not so bad, and, you know, especially on Twitter. There's more and more chatter about, you know, don't be so stupid, it's fine. But we should just confirm for everyone listening who hasn't driven an M3 CSL that the cog swapping delay in that car, even if you massage it, is spectacularly long, obviously by modern standards, and long by the standards of a good manual box at the time as well. It's pretty extraordinary, actually.
Yeah, and I think because it's a manual box, isn't it, effectively, with an automated clutch. Mm. So people who do conversions, and there are a few, it's all the kit is in the car basically to do quite an easy conversion to a manual, full manual gearbox. But I think, you know, the argument is, oh well, it takes less time than it does to perform a manual change, which one might be true, but at least while you're doing a manual change, you're doing something, you're in control of it. You know, I know I've put the clutch in because I've just done it, and now I'm swapping the lever and now I'm lifting the clutch up. It feels like it's less time and it's probably smoother because you're doing it all yourself, whereas an SMG, you're just waiting.
I'm not even sure it is quicker.
You're not sure
even
it's quicker? What about the full, if you put it on max, you know, minimum speed, maximum revs, upshifts, are they quicker than a...
Correct me if I'm wrong, that's the type kind of upshift you have to manage the most, isn't it? Like a red line, what is a red line in that car, like 8.5 or something?
Something like that.
One of those.
I enjoy trying to smooth the shifts out myself. That's...
You'll be asking for a convertible CSL next, won't you?
But the made one. Right, before this turns into a massive slagfest of the CSL, let's move on to the bloopers then, the ones that we personally really don't like. We won't spend long, and then we'll maybe, let's leave SUVs to one side. We'll come to SUVs in a moment. So we're not giving you an easy out here. You can't just pick X6M, all right? What is your least favourite M car in history? Ricky?
It's difficult. You can only comment on the ones you've driven, after all. And there aren't, you know, in the last 20 years, there haven't been many even average M cars. Most of them, they've been slanted maybe a little bit too far one way or the other, but none of them have been disastrous, unless I'm really forgetting something. I drove a Z4 M recently, and for me, that was probably, it lacked the kind of intrinsic agility that I want from an M car, but it wasn't a bad car, and it had a decent, you know, it's not an S54 in that, in Z4 M, is it?
S54 engine.
Yeah, that was in the Z3M, but it wasn't the. That was the same. No, that's the same straight six as in the E46M3 and CSL. But that wasn't in the Z4M, I don't think. So the engine was a little bit disappointing. Didn't help that I drove the Z3M directly before. It was. It didn't have the agility, and the steering and the gear shift were just a little bit woolly. Mm-hmm. But it was still a good car, and it still had a nice, easy adjustability, and, you know, very easy to live with and drive. So apart from that, I'm really struggling. I know a lot of you guys didn't like the, and I don't want to preempt anything here, but the M4 CS of the last generation.
Yeah, I just didn't like that car.
Is that going to be your choice?
Well, it's one of the ones I didn't like, but
that wasn't on my list. It is now. I've just remembered that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Carry on.
No, again,
on a dry track,
any last gen M3, M4, I didn't really. It got better over the course of the life of the car. It did get better.
Competition, but I thought was really good.
See, I never drove that generation when it was new. Mm. I only drove the competition version when they'd sorted out the geometry at the rear. And
yeah,
that was a vastly improved car.
I think you could feel the early cars just didn't. They didn't come together. I never really sort of got a feel for the balance of grip in them at all, and I couldn't read them. And I guess I was lucky because I didn't really have a big accident in one. I know there were some had at the time.
It's interesting if you go and look through Auto Trader, put in M3, M4, and just look at the number of Cat D, Cat C. Everyone has at some point gone, I'll give it a go. What could possibly go wrong?
Watch
bang.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I had a close friend who was talking about buying one, and she's not really a car person, but obviously, so, you know, there was one at a local dealer, and I just had a quiet word and said, you might not want to, because there's a chance it will either have had a hard life or there's a pretty good chance it might have been bent at some point. But no, I wasn't actually going to pick that. I was going to go for the current M8, which I just think is, you know, I'm all for them trying new things, but I just don't get that car. It doesn't. It hasn't got enough traditional dynamism about it, and it doesn't do the luxury GT thing as well as the other cars that you might spend the same money on. So I just think it's a bit sort of lost.
Quick question before we move on to Matt. Just with the early M4s, M3s, obviously a bit twitchy, but there will be good bargains to be had out there.
Yeah.
Do you think that car's various idiosyncrasies, should we say, in the handling department could be fixed by taking it to, you know, a Q prep or someone who's really going to set it up properly with the right tyres, you know, perfect geometry? Or do you think it's more fundamental than that? And would just buy a competition?
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you? You'd like to think that the specialists would know how to sort them out. I don't know for a fact.
Because they didn't do a lot to the competition, really, did they? It wasn't a massive root and branch change. It was just a few geo tweaks, a bit more power. But it felt to me night and day. I trusted that car. I knew where you could place it. Whereas, like you say, the early ones were just sketchy as anything, particularly in the wet.
Yeah. So what would you go for, mate? What was your least favourite?
I'm probably going to upset listeners, watchers and the internet by E60 M5, the V10.
Oh.
Just never gelled with that car at all. Didn't understand it. I hated the fact that you had to press a button to have more power. Just give me the power. That's what the engine meant. That's such a gimmick. I hated it. It obviously had the ridiculous SMG gearbox, which I know I've said that I, you know, quite like, but at the same time, when it was new, because I drove the M3 CSL later, like you do when you approach these older cars and you're willing to give them a bit of slack. When it was new, it was hopeless. And, you know, shift speeds go up just again. Just do it properly. Don't give me options for increasing levels of rubbish.
They'd sort of, the complexity had gone away in advance and they hadn't really got round to sort of harnessing it at that point, had they? They had all this extra functionality and adjustability in the cars, but they hadn't really figured out.
There was a lot of ambition, but not the execution.
The way to make it sense of it.
And again, I mean, this probably says more about me, the whole V10 thing. Oh, it's a Formula One engine. No, it's not a great road car engine, though. Mm. It should feel stonkingly fast, and it never did, because you had to wind it up to get it.
Oh, didn't
it?
Ricky's just looking up the bit in the magazine where you said
I'm
it was brilliant.
That because just in this feature with the factory. BMW did make, according to this story, which someone wrote, a E60 M5 CSL. Red line went from 8250 to 9000. I was just getting the mag open to check whether they got rid of the SMG and put in a manual box. They didn't put in a manual box, but they did swap in a Getrag dual clutch box, which was the one that eventually went into the E92.
I'm sure you could get
the car for you, my friend.
You could get a manual in the States.
Yeah, you could.
But what you want is a one-off, never sold prototype.
DCT. Exactly, a seven-speed manual, wouldn't it?
Was it a seven-speed?
Was it in a seven-speed?
I don't know.
I'm sure that car was seven-speed.
I think that's right. Yeah. And the range was poor. I went on a launch of that car, which included some high-speed launches down a runway and stuff like that. And it was a single-day event. Arrive first thing in the morning, go back on a flight late in the afternoon. We had to refuel halfway around the test route. That's how I think the range on a good day is about 180 miles or something like that.
So what you're saying is the Touring is the most ridiculous car of all time, and therefore very cool, but also totally
there is a lot of love within our circles for that generation Touring. There are quite a lot of our colleagues who get quite excited, and I just go,
everything goes on those engines, doesn't it? Top end, bottom end, electronics.
It's all built of chocolate. Everything is made of chocolate. But, you know, it's a Formula One engine. It's not.
Just sounds like one. Which
is nice. Well, when you start it doesn't even sound like
no,
one.
It sounds
like some weird diesel. Yeah,
because of the direct injection. It's just everything about that car, I was so excited. New M5, I'm going to be driving.
So you felt betrayed by it, and now you're just mouthing it off on a
phone.
That was where the rot kind of set in for 5 Series. Well, it suddenly felt like a bigger car. And they've all... So the twin turbo that replaced... What's that? BMW?
F10.
Didn't really gel with that. Didn't do it for me either. Mm. So I think maybe that... My 5 Series love, and I think I've got a CS coming for a thing we're doing in future, so I'm very keen to try
M5?
Yeah, because I've heard some good things about people's opinions that I very much trust.
That'll restore your faith.
That'll restore me rather than mine, so, but you will like it.
I feel like I've had a therapy session here. I feel like I've got a lot of stuff off my chest about, and I totally understand why people love that car, and it should work, but the handling wasn't what I wanted it to be either. It wasn't quite as involving. It did feel a bit remote for me.
Just in a sentence, what was the problem with the handling?
It's a long time ago now. I'm an old man.
A long time since you put it in the ditch.
So. I did, although, I'm not sure I should be saying this. I was on a handling day type event for another title where I did see a colleague quite comprehensively throw one off in front of me, Touring as well.
Did it hit something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, twice. but... I didn't feel like it didn't feel very involving on the track. Yes, you could hang it out at silly angles if you wanted to, but on the road it just felt a bit too big, and it felt like you really had to be driving flat out to get something back. And
yeah, you're right, it's not having seven
from, and a half. Yeah, it's been a long time from Why memory bothered? It's got sort of quite a small squidgy steering, thick rim steering with a bit of squidge to it, quite remote from the front end, but also quite pointy and quite when it does start moving around on track, you've got sort of it's fairly lively at the same time.
Yes,
Yeah. Is that where the fat steering wheels came in? Well, I don't want to get sidetracked because you've still got to name your number one M disappointment.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, we should come back to the steering wheel.
I don't know because there are cars that aren't for me. I'm with you, Storm, on the latest M8. I think the 8 Series 50i is a much better car. And likewise, Diz, I think the 550i of that 5 Series is one of my favourite BMWs of all time. Yeah. Just such a lovely car. And you think, oh, that would make quite a nice M car, actually. So I think, yeah, maybe one of those two. I also agree, Storm, that the last generation M4, which I'd sort of forgotten about until you mentioned it, and I've just Googled it to remind myself what shape it is, and then you go, oh yeah, I remember how that feels. I remember that sort of lack of confidence about going near its limits on a track, particularly.
Which is strange, because the GTS didn't have any of those problems, did it?
No, you knew exactly what it was up to. Yeah. People hated it, but we knew exactly what it was. I was dead anyway. I knew exactly what it was up to. So I don't know. You could pick any of those if we're not going with the SUVs.
Let's talk about the SUVs just for a minute. I think we're probably going to be of one mind about them. But I did have a go in that Concept XM, well, the real one.
Oh, yeah.
On the same thing that I drove the M2, and wasn't a fan. Mm. I mean, I just don't. It is a product that clearly, you know, they're using to reach out in a different direction and develop as a brand, and they want, you know, that it's got the old Rolls-Royce Starlight headlining, and they care about the rear legroom, and, you know, and it's like, well, okay, who's this for? And do they really know what the M brand's about? And I suspect maybe they don't, really. It just wasn't much to drive at all, you know, as this whole new generation hybrid powertrain in it, but it just didn't do anything for me.
Because that's an M5 powertrain, isn't it? It's upcoming.
Supposedly, yeah.
And you didn't like that, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I think my beef with them, such as it is, I mean, you know, it's fine, it's a car, it's nice, people buy it, fine, whatever, you know, fine. I don't understand the sports SUV thing, but that's not my... It's fine. If people do, happy days, good for them. What I prefer to get... With M, it amplifies the best bits of the car. You know, you take it, it amplifies the most dynamic bits and it turns them up. What is there to turn up in an SUV? What is there? You're always going to be stymied by the fact it's 1.7, 1.8 metres tall, 2.2, 2.3 tonnes and X and Y. You can make it more dynamic if you want to, but as the old saying goes, you know, how would I get to so-and-so? Well, I wouldn't have started from here. No, exactly. That's how they all feel.
They seem to have chosen arbitrary hills to die on. You know, all of their SUVs are coil sprung. Now, if you look at the market... Everybody's gone, oh, if we go for air, that means we can lower the thing down. Yeah. And you know, you look at what Macan or a Cayenne does with that. Mm. It's transformative. Mm. But M Division seem to have decided that all of their cars need coil springs, full stop, including the 2.5-ton SUVs. And I think that is a problem. And, you know, they don't really sort of gain much in the bargain, I don't think.
Why are they doing it? Is it like something to do with initial steering and they need that sort of...
Yeah, I think
response off centre, because there can't be many reasons why you'd go for it, because it isn't cost. Because once people have got an X5M specced up to 80 or 90 grand,
it's
probably
a pretty profitable car at that point.
Yeah, exactly. You can put some air springs on that. It's very odd.
It's strange, isn't it? But then they haven't done an air spring car, have they? Let's just never enter there.
You look at the X3M and it rides appallingly. Mm.
But let's come back to what Matt's saying, and just turning up the wrong thing. You know, I mean, they just want it to feel sporty, but in totally the wrong way.
But they're inauthentic, aren't they? Sorry.
Well, maybe it works in some countries. Maybe you develop it in Germany and then you try it in a few other places and we go, oh, yeah, that works. But maybe it's, I don't know, maybe we try them here on rubbish roads too much. And you go, God, this is too big, too heavy, too tall, too stiff. Maybe it's fine in some places. Hmm.
Should we just... spend a few minutes talking about our very favourite moment that we can remember in an M car ever, and where it happened, and why you think it might have stayed with you. I'll start with this one. So the one that jumps out to me involves you two as well, and that group test we did with the latest M3, because the car just really stood out to me. That we went to Blyton Park. It was a group test, Stelvio Giulia Quadrifoglio, and an E63, and we had a day at Blyton Park, just hooning around, and it just disappeared and it was sort of March, wasn't it, or April or something, but it was really lovely.
It was a springy, springy day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was that?
Would have been 2 years ago, mate, or a year ago. Year ago.
Oh, yes, it back was, in March, yeah, because we still had to do some distancing. And
yeah, that's right, because we'd been in Wales the day before and it had been pea soup. We couldn't get anything done.
I had a puncture. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I didn't turn up.
Yeah.
Quite a long time afterwards, and you said, "Don't worry, there's nothing to see." I think I did bring sweet treats. So
you did cake, did. Mate. Yeah.
Grovel my way out of.
Always a good way to redeem yourself, mate. The cake. But yeah, so we were on a loser, weren't we? And then we just had this brilliant day at Blighton. But the car, I remember specifically because it just seemed to me, it seemed to represent that M car thing so cleverly and so effectively. You know, because it was perfectly precise. You could put it at any angle, at any speed, in any given corner, and if you felt like you needed to drift it through two cones, right there on the exit of the toughest corner on the track, you could have done it, and that was very, very different to the way the Alpha felt, which probably wasn't as good on the road as it had been on the track as it had been on the road, or it was just different, wasn't it? I mean, smaller car, but had different sort of qualities, and the Merc was just an absolute. You know, rocket ship, wasn't it? It was just like a cruise missile, but
different car again, though.
Yeah. But that's what I will. You know, I think that's probably the best day I ever had in an M car. I would think.
I think that was that's high up. That was a good test. I think we both chose
the wrong Alpha. Car. The wrong car. Yeah.
the right car.
Is it small? Is the Alpha smaller? Because it feels smaller.
It is.
Than the latest M3.
Quite a lot smaller. It's probably a lot lighter
and that's
as well.
And that's my preferred size for a sports saloon, is that sort of size car.
And I preferred its gait on the road.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's more supple ride. But we're off on a tangent here. We're not here to talk about why we chose the right car.
Yeah.
But I do, that M3, I do remember you got out of it and said, well, you're going to like this.
Yeah.
And on the track, it was unbelievable. The sense of knowing exactly where the rear axle was, where it was and what it was doing, which is like, how can they do this given how much it weighs?
Mm.
It was a sensational track car. And like you say, you could hang it out at any stupid angle you wanted, or you could, I mean, it did have that drift.
Oh, yeah, that was a bit harsh
about that drift score thing.
Yeah,
you could lay down some perfect 300 yard drift, so when you come back the other side and it would go, 3.5 stars. Yeah.
You'd think, if anything, they'd overcompensate with a speedometer. That's
how the industry feels about you, mate.
Yeah. It's a tusk. Oh, critics.
Okay. So, your best M moment?
Well, crikey. There was time I finally got E92 on track, because I didn't get it at first. It's weird. It had a feeling like the wheels were there on the road. It felt way too...
For the listener, mate, where is...
For the watcher, I'm doing it around my middle, so it felt like the almost like steered wheels were around the front doors, not where they were. It felt way too...
Nervous.
Yeah, nervous. But then on track, it made sense. And that engine's glorious.
Mm.
I love that. But probably, and it's going to involve you here now, is when we went on the M2 comp launch.
Oh, yeah.
And we went to Ascari and we went out on the road.
Didn't
we?
Yeah.
And it was just like a bit like that M4 to M4 comp, the light bulb moment. It's like, they've worked this out now. They know. The original M2 was, the concept was great, but the execution just wasn't quite there. And that, for me, that's a high watermark, that M2 comp, I think.
Did that sort of change it from sort of hot rod to sports car in a way? Sort of thuggish.
Definitely. There was like a delicacy there now as well. You could drive it and appreciate the feedback and put it exactly where you want. It wasn't just all about wide arches and how fast and noisy can I go in a straight line. And obviously it has the proper M3 engine as well. So it was
all sorts of that.
And we did the road. What was the, was it an M5 comp?
There was an M5 competition at the same
And the
launch.
Difference,
yeah.
same
yeah,
road.
Yeah.
It's just like bits of road where the M5 was getting really upset.
It was a really lovely road route
wasn't it?
In the middle of Spain near Ascari Brace Resort.
Yeah.
And it's just a very, quite a short 20-minute loop or something.
Yeah.
It goes around the back, but really nice twisty road of the sort you might find in the UK, you know, like one of our test routes that we use.
Yeah.
It was a nice, I remember that.
And then you went to your vid and I got to stand like a mountain man by the side of the road with lots of...
Oh, of course, yes.
In the searing heat with lots of locals driving past going, what's this guy?
Why is this guy standing
around amongst fly
what's
tipping?
What's wrong with him? Yeah.
He seems to be thumbing a lift, but his thumb's not out. It's very strange.
Not that guy. He doesn't like the E60 M5. Leave him.
Doesn't like SMGs. He does like SMGs.
I do like SMGs.
Do you have a particular memory, Matt?
I'm going to pick Anglesey Racetrack about 3-4 years ago when we were in... we had the M4 GTS of the generation that, you know, like... And a lot of people really don't like that M4 GTS. Some of them may be in this room. But... I think it's great. I still think it's great. It's a weird one. I think it depends how you set that car up because it's quite different and adjustable. But even though we had lots of drivers in it at the same time on the same day, I've never known a car polarise opinion quite that much where we have experienced testers coming and going, I absolutely hate this car. I cannot bear it. It comes last in my reckoning out of the 11 cars we've got. And then I come in and go, there's no car I would like to go back out for half an hour in right now, because you could just, it felt so sort of precise at the front, you could put it exactly where you want it, and then you could just do what you want with the back end. And if you wanted to just drive through really precisely round a corner, you could. If you just wanted to drive around with the rear tyres on fire, you could. And I thought it was really good. Not a great road car in the fashion it was set up for us, but on the track on that day, I have never had more fun in a BMW.
Well, no, I mean, the thing is that they put the optional coilovers on that press car, didn't they? And then they set it up for the track, even though they were told that it was going to be judged
on
the road as well.
A day on the road, yeah.
And, you know, obviously they just put all their eggs in that basket. And, it was just how hard it was to drive on the road because of the setup, not necessarily because of, you know, anything irredeemable about the car.
But I mean, I know people who've driven it on the road in all kinds of setups, and they still hate it. You know, ride and handling engineers who've benchmarked it, and they come away going, what are you talking about? It's rubbish. And I say, no, what? I don't understand. And it's a real polariser. And I think maybe if people didn't hate it so much, I wouldn't like it quite so much. But I like it a lot. And there are a core of maybe half a dozen people I know who really like that car. And a core of people who...
They're clearly all your tough people then, mate, aren't they?
Yeah, clearly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's just, I don't know. So that's the most fun I've had in an M car.
Have you got on? Is it going to? I suspect Ricky's is going to involve the Nürburgring 24 hour and
no. Right, okay. Well, no. I think not so much the driving experience, but I remember being totally overwhelmed by the sense of history when I was lucky enough to drive BMW UK's Batmobile, which they've had for an awfully long time and is a bit sort of dog-eared in various parts, but mechanically is looked after very well. And I picked it up from their HQ down the M3 Farnborough, and the first sort of couple of hours in it, just completely in awe of just what this car meant culturally to not just BMW, but the sort of performance car world at large. And you know, it comes from that incredible era of the ETCC and all of that. It just completely got on top of me. But otherwise, it's very difficult to pick one. My experiences tend to fall into two camps. Track work. I remember Anglesey in the M2 competition when we headed up there a few years ago. You know, did a couple of laps and really got on top of it. And like, bang, the balance. You just could not believe. Come out of the third gear bend completely sideways and you'd be barely making any changes at all on the controls. The trajectory was just set and you'd be riding it out. And it was like, it's one of those cars where you can put the wheel on the rumble strip every single time, even in the wet, just stunning. And the M3 we had 2 years ago, I think, pretty much the same thing, you know, slightly less agile maybe. So that's one side. I think M cars, even the ones that are heavily road biased, just work on the track. And, you know, that's part of their enduring appeal. And the duality of the brand means that, you know, this other portion of my M experiences that I've just loved so much over the years is long distance stuff in an M5. And I've done it in a few different types of M5, and it's always just a sort of quiet, satisfying thrill to be covering big ground in something so suited for it. And you just know if you've got a half-decent road once you come off the motorway between the motorway and your final stop or the next morning, you know you're going to have a little bit of fun there, even if you've been in the saddle sort of six or seven hours. And I just love that.
Even the old ones
about
do that. You know, you drive an E39 now, and it feels
especially
like...
Especially the E39 does
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, you know.
You forgive the steering.
Just going extremely fast on Autobahn. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had this M5 CS, obviously, recently for a feature. And I thought it was limited to 155, and it just obviously blasted past her. Like, for a split second, because they normally stop at like indicated 163. And I thought it'll be 160, straight past that. And it kept going, and I thought it would definitely be 186 now. Like, it did straight past that. It sort of goes beyond 190, and then I had to sort of come off. But I mean, God knows how fast that they would go if you kept
you
pinned.
You run out of single carriageway road.
But I mean, the fact it will do that, the fact that, you know, it's so childish, isn't it? That if you're on an autopilot and you know that sort of like a 911 GTS or something comes up, it's like, if you want to, you can just drop it. And
yeah, special car.
Yeah, very, very special
right.
car.
We're sort of running out of time, so let's do one more question about the future of the M Division. What sort of opportunities it might have, and what we feel about electrification and what they're going to do next. We've covered the sort of XM thing, which I'm hoping very much might just turn into a sort of a bit of a cul-de-sac, you know, a bit of a sort of a bit of a side thing going on for other markets. I'm being very unkind, I don't know.
Not least because there's only one true XM, isn't there? We all know that.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But no, what do we think about electric M cars? Will they work?
Go on, all right, okay. I mean, yes, they'll have to, I suppose. What I like the fact you can do with any electric car is that the response of the motor is very quick. And if you put them in the right places, you could do cool things with torque vectoring, and you can make them handle in different ways. You can make them do all kinds of things. You know, you don't have to rely on mechanical interventions. So, you know, at the moment, if you've got an engine at the front driving the back wheels between the two, you've got some kind of gearbox which you might or might not like, and then you've got some kind of electronically controlled limited slip differential, and the response of all of those three things added together takes a little while, and you need some controller to control them all. Whereas actually with a pure EV, motor response is really, really quick. So you can tune stability control systems much more easily, control traction control systems much more easily. And if you want to torque vector so that you say, okay, I want a really drifty sideways car, it's probably very easy to set up compared to an internally combusted car. But I mean, I'd miss the noise, and at the moment battery tech means that, you know, if you want any range out of a car, you've got to stick 700 800 kilos of battery somewhere, you know, and those things are not easy to put into an electric vehicle, and nor is it easy to manage the heat generated by power dissipation and recovery. You know, these things get hot really quickly, and for a car that people might drive from the UK to the Nürburgring, do a few laps, go and stay in a hotel, wake up, drive home. That's not an easy thing to do in an electric car. So I don't know. Is a short bit.
Because we said, you know, we sort of said that M cars maybe don't lean on their engines for so much of their appeal as certain other
brands. Yeah, brands. Yeah, true.
But they're still important. You know, an M engine has to be central to the appeal of the car, doesn't it? Mm. And their engines of a particular kind. And I kind of think, as you know, if they get their hybrid executions right, it could work quite well for them, because they often make quite big cars, so there's quite a lot of packaging space in them, and you know, marginally, the marginal gain on weight might not be ridiculous, and that means they haven't got to take out, you know, they haven't got to take out engines completely in plug-in hybrids. They can still have that to lean on when they need it, but yeah, when they come to, well, we've seen that, haven't we? We've seen them sort of begin to move towards plug-in hybrids, but yeah, as yet not really deal with the electric car thing.
Yeah, but the other thing is, I suppose that they will be the last internally combusted BMWs to go, won't they? You know, you can keep hold of internally combusted engines for the majority of our careers, for example. You know, you'd think they will still be around in, and even in maybe very limited numbers, it's feasible that in the next 10, 15 years people go, actually, you could run that on biofuel, you could run an internally combusted engine on, you can run on hydrogen if you want to. You know, it could be that there are solutions. It won't, and also at some point somebody will start marketing solid state batteries, which will make them a lot lighter and stuff like that. I think if you were to make an M car pure EV now, it would not be the same as one in 20 years time.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Well, I spoke to Frank Van Meel, CEO of M, recently, and he it wasn't, you know, set in stone, but the S58 engine in regulatory terms has got a long life ahead of it. And it came off the back of a question about whether they downsize and go hybrid with an M3, like AMG will with four-cylinder C63 that's coming up. And he was fairly adamant that the change would be wholesale when it arrived, so there would be no downsizing especially, and then the M3 would go pure electric when it needed to, but as late as possible. And I think BMW overall it's difficult, isn't it? On one hand, it's got the toughest job of the triumvirate of super saloon makers, AMG, Audi Sport, BMW, because it goes back to that thing, you know, if the AMG looks mega, makes, you know, has a synthesized soundtrack and it's incredibly fast, they'll sell loads. Audi, again, lots of security under wheel, very good straight line pace, that's fine. But BMW has to offer more. It's that part of the brand is its central tenet. I think they're in a good place, though. Look at the i4. Comes in two flavors. This is their electric saloon. They do an M50 version with four-wheel drive, and that's sort of like an M light. It's not actually engineered by M, but it's got all sorts of bracing, loads of power, and it's nicely set up. Very stable, will do. It will take a little bit of angle. It's quite an impressive bit of kit, but the encouraging thing is actually the entry-level i4 eDrive 40, which is just rear-wheel drive, and that has got such a fundamentally lovely balance and nicely responsive steering, great throttle accelerator response, and it's just a pleasant thing to steer. Now, what do you have there? You have a BMW saloon. You know, they have to be well balanced and they're good to drive. You know, that doesn't make it an M saloon, but they've got the same canvas. It's just a question if they can find enough engineering, I don't even know how to put it, but they've got to find a way to just elevate it in the same way that a normal N car is elevated in terms of the sensory appeal. And that remains to be seen, but they have the canvas to build an enjoyable electric driver's car. Even the i3, actually, quite enjoyable.
Yeah, what's interesting about that, I think you're right when you mentioned the Audi RS, because the Audi RS e-tron GT, or whatever they call it, feels like an Audi RS model to me, whereas I don't think an electric M does yet. But yeah, you're right. It's easier to make an RS EV, and I'm sure it's easier to make an AMG.
But BMW, you can get the weight low, and as you say, you've got less hysteresis to deal with, and so on and so forth. You can, and it goes back to what we said at the beginning, adjustability is so important to M, almost more so than the engine. And with an electric car, you know, the toy box is arguably bigger than with an ICE car, just in terms of pure chassis dynamism. And obviously with solid-state batteries, that will move the game on massively. That said, I'm not that much looking forward to the day when we have to give up straight sixes. What about you, Diz?
I sort of agree. But I think we've got, because that life cycle of that engine is so long, I think by the time we get to electric M cars, the vast majority will have accepted the electric propulsion system. And I don't think it'll be a conversation that we'll be having as loudly or as often. I think we'll have sort of got over the fact that internal combustion engine isn't the default choice. And like you say, all these tools they have to make it feel like an M car will make it feel like an M car.
And you think they'll achieve that? Because we can accept that we can only have an electric M car, but it doesn't mean we will love it.
I think this maybe, you know, this goes to the heart of what M is, this adaptability, because when you look back, what is an M car? We ask ourselves, what is an M car? Now, for me, initially I was thinking, motorsport, so I'm thinking E30, one of my favourites. It wasn't the one. Homologation special, now as a rallying geek, and I love that kind of homologation aspect to it. But look at it, M cars. There hasn't really been a true motorsport M car for a long, long time. So that part, that essential part of its history doesn't really matter anymore. And I think they have a talent for reinventing themselves. An M3 now is nothing like what an M3 started out as, what it was intended to be. So I think they'll take whatever the technology is of the time and they'll make it work, and we'll all be driving M cars going, what a great driver's car. And I think, I'd like to think, I will miss an internal combustion engine, but I would like to think we'll be saying that's a great driver's car, and we won't be saying for an EV, I think we'll just accept that that's how the car is made to go. And the sooner they get over this fact that you don't have to have V8 sound pumped in, you know, that's just...
Yeah, that's the trouble, isn't it? Yeah. We've got one thing pretending to be another.
It's not a vegetarian sausage. It's, you know, just...
it's something else.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a vegetarian dish on its own, right?
Yeah, enjoy it, and it's tasty and it's delicious. Yeah. And it's...
So there is a good chance that we could be, maybe not in this room, but you know, sat somewhere as old coffin dodgers... just reflecting on 100 years of the M Division in another 50 years' time. Imagine that.
Imagine that.
With the same microphones. Probably the same laptop.
What's interesting, actually, I don't know, I feel like that was the first time we mentioned the E30 M3, which is the original M3 in this entire hour of conversation, isn't it? Which I don't know, doesn't feel like an oversight, but it feels like a surprise, because it's a great car.
It's the one everyone talks about, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's...
And they are great. They're brilliant.
As M experiences go, many years ago, I borrowed the heritage car. And normally, in this job, as you know, you'll get approached by someone and go, that's a nice car. Mm. And I don't know about you, but my reaction is, oh, thanks, but it's not mine.
Always. Yep.
Always, yep, always. Probably. And we were doing something at Halfords, other auto accessory shops exist and all that. And the guy helped us out with a load of stuff. And he went, oh, that's a nice car. And I just went, thanks.
Tremendous. Yeah.
It's got that kind of appeal, that car. To drive, beautiful chassis, but it's a bit hopeless in some respects. The engine's a bit flat unless you wind it out. But it's what an incredible car that is, and it's incredible because of its very tight association to motorsport. But they've got nothing like that now. But you don't hear people going, oh, that's not a proper M3 because, you know, it hasn't won 12 British Touring Car Championships.
No, it's a good point.
Well, the M4 is closer... to the there's probably more synergies there than you realise. Like, I think with aero, the front end of the GT3 race cars informed the design of the road car. Obviously, they should have the same engine, but I think that because I up until recently did think, you know, this is getting fairly tenuous, but equally, you know, that is still a homologation car to the letter. And actually, there's a lot of synergies, as I say. So it does still exist. It's just that much harder to sort of appreciate when you haven't got a Group A M3s wanging around everywhere.
And I don't think the average customer really gives a monkey's about the motorsport heritage.
No, I think back in the day, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of E30 M3 owners would have been acutely aware of the motorsport link. Whereas now, I can't imagine that's the case.
The business has grown so much that. Yeah, I mean, that's the victim of their own success there. But, you know, I mean, I get the impression they still know the importance of motorsport to the core of the kind of clientele. So.
Well, another thing Van Meel said was that in terms of having motorsport in the business, he said that, you know, an operation can only really benefits from, like, heavy motorsport involvement up to about, you know, maybe 10 years at most after motorsport activities cease. Beyond that, it's just complete hot air. And so I think there's a lot of truth in that. And if you go to Garching, you've got the racing cars are being assembled, constructed in the same space that the upcoming M cars and existing M cars are still being developed, you know, because they never stop tweaking these things. And so there's a huge crossover that we don't see, but the, you know, certainly I think for motorsport, BMW for BMW motorsport is still massively important, probably more so than you see from the outside, but it is like at the core. And I'm quite cynical about that sort of thing, but
well, you don't seem so, mate.
In this case, no, I know, that's why I'm trying to put that across. But
marvellous. Well, that'll do us, I think, gentlemen. We've gone on for long enough. Thank you for listening. We've been Autocar, and this has been the Autocar podcast, and happy anniversary BMW M.